This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 6th of October 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 5th of October 2017, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Youth 17 in Court over M3 closure. First out-of-hours GP hub opens this week. And firefighter crisis is risking lives. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Youth of 17 in court over M3 closure. A local teenager also accused of blackmail attempt against the school. A boy accused of throwing an incendiary device onto a Hampshire motorway, which closed the road for more than 11 hours, has also been accused of blackmailing a school for thousands of pounds, a court has heard. The 17-year-old from Winchester appeared at Basingstoke Youth Court, accused of two counts of arson with intent to endanger life, and two of causing danger to road users in relation to incidents on the M3 near Winchester on September the 16th and 23rd. As previously reported, police closed the M3 near Winchester on Saturday, September the 23rd, and bomb disposal experts were called to investigate the, quote, potentially hazardous material, unquote, that was found in the carriageway between junctions 9 and 11, causing travel chaos across southern Hampshire as motorists attempted to divert around the closure. James Burnham, prosecuting, described the items as incendiary devices and said the impact on the closure would have led to a cost of millions of pounds. The defendant, who cannot be named because of his age, is also accused of carrying out 8 offences of burglary against a school, during which computer equipment of an unknown value was stolen. He's also accused of 2 charges of blackmail with menaces against the same school, each demanding payment of £10,000 in the online currency Bitcoin. The defendant faces 2 further charges of theft of miscellaneous items from a Tesco supermarket on the days preceding the 2 motorway incidents. He will now be remanded in youth detention until he appears before Winchester Crown Court on Thursday, October the 11th. Social media users shared pictures of the scene near Winchester on September the 23rd, with one showing a man walking his dog on the hard shoulder, others playing golf, and another doing a handstand on the carriageway. Bomb disposal experts were called to the scene, but police later said the substance was flammable, not explosive. Exactly what it was has not been revealed. There was a similar incident on the same bridge, which leads to St. Catherine's Hill, at around 4 a.m. on Saturday, September the 16th. On that occasion, police received reports of something being dropped onto the carriageway and that an object was alight, but when officers attended, they found only broken glass and no fire.
First Out of Hours GP hub opens this week. Winchester MP Steve Brine had a tour of a new Out of Hours care hub, cutting the metaphorical ribbon on the new facility ahead of its opening on Monday. The new primary care hub at Badger Farm Surgery allows patients to see a GP, nurse or healthcare assistant from 5 to 8 p.m. on weekdays, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays and 8 a.m. till 12 noon on Sundays. The new hub has been funded by NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, and will be run by the local GP Federation, Mid Hampshire Healthcare. It is the first in a series proposed for Hampshire, with more scheduled to open soon in Eastleigh and Rumsey, with additional services such as physiotherapy and mental health. Patients can book a routine appointment by ringing their own GP surgery. Urgent appointments will be booked by the out-of-hours GP service via NHS 111 when GP surgeries are closed.
Firefighter crisis is risking lives. Safety concerns over worst ever shortage. Safety campaigners are warning that the worst ever shortage of on-call firefighters across Hampshire is putting lives at risk. Fire chiefs are struggling to fill scores of vacancies caused by the dwindling number of retained, that is part-time, personnel who perform a vital role in rural communities without a full-time crew. Village fire stations are understaffed and often have to rely on crews being brought in from elsewhere to deal with emergencies. Last night, one ex-firefighter said, "It's a critical situation that could easily lead to loss of life." Gary Jackson, secretary of the Hampshire branch of the Fire Brigades Union, added, "Not being able to turn out immediately will always put lives at risk." Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service admitted that maintaining the essential life-saving service provided by rural fire stations remains a challenge. An increasing number of the villagers now work in towns and cities, making it impossible to reach their local fire station in time to answer call-outs. Another reason for the shortage is that understaffed firms are increasingly reluctant to release employees for firefighting duties. But critics claim that there is no real incentive for people to become part-time firemen. Despite being on call for at least 35 hours a week, they are paid as little as £1,112 a year, plus an additional payment for each call-out. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service currently has more than 40 vacancies for retained personnel, most of which are at village stations. About 75% of the county is classed as rural, with 300,000 people living in the country areas. And villages often contain a large number of high-risk buildings, such as thatched cottages and huge barns full of highly inflammable hay. But the Hampshire Chronicle has been told that the shortage of retained firefighters has left some fire stations unable to man their own appliances, resulting in crews having to be drafted in from elsewhere when a blaze breaks out. Droxford is said to be one of the worst hit villages, with critics claiming that the local fire station has virtually closed. Earlier this month, an elderly driver was seriously injured in a collision on the A32 near Droxford, but the incident was dealt with by crews from Bishop's Waltham, Wickham and Cosham. Other stations such as Sutton Scotney and Stockbridge are often left out of action during the day because only one firefighter is available. Vince Barnes, retained support manager for part-time crews in the area, has said the shortage is probably worse than ever. Tristan Ashby, chief executive of the Retained Firefighters Union, said the dearth of on-call crews was resulting in increased danger to the public. He added, "Some brigades are not doing enough to recruit retained firefighters, and Hampshire is one of them. It's no good just having an opened day at a fire station once in a while and expecting loads of people to turn up. You need to stand outside supermarkets and tell people what a fantastic career being a firefighter can be, but it's just not happening." And there is a response here from the fire service, who say, "A Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service spokesman said the shortage of retained firefighters was a national issue. He added, "In Droxford, there is only a small population available. Therefore, the overall number of people we can recruit from is small compared to larger rural villages and small towns." The local management team have recently successfully recruited two new firefighters, which will improve its availability following their training period. Retrained recruitment is an ongoing process, not just in Hampshire, but throughout the country. Issues are being addressed by working hard to explore several options, including local advertising campaigns. The team are more than happy to come and speak to employers about the benefits of having their employees as firefighters. Fire Service Group Manager Steve Ash said, "When we get an emergency call, we deploy the nearest available and appropriate resources. We routinely move fire engines between stations to ensure that we have the right resources strategically placed across the county."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements, which will be followed by Christian comment. Bushell. Anthony Rex, known as Tony Bushell, on the 25th of September, aged 82. Dutton. Barbara Joyce Dutton, on the 21st of September, aged 89. Green, Helen Grace Agnes Green, on the 26th of September. Hutchison, Robert Hutchison, at home on the 22nd of September, aged 76. Richards, Brian Richards, Lieutenant Commander, Royal Navy, retired, on the 28th of September, in Basingstoke Hospital, aged 59. West, Rosemary West, at home on the 14th of September.
Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Graham Bughead, and he entitles it The Path of Glory. The other day, whilst in my study, attempting to apply myself and mop up some of the work outstanding on my computer, routinely ignored in the busyness of life and other distractions, I was listening to Radio 4 in the background at a sufficiently low volume so as not to actually disturb me. During my effort to concentrate, I vaguely heard the beginning of a reading from a book that sounded very familiar indeed. I dashed across the room and turned up the radio. I listened intently as the reading progressed. I couldn't quite locate it. Where and what am I listening to? It was very interesting, and soon it emerged what the narrative was. It was about an event that utterly changed the life of the author. The book in question is quite old now. It is called My Year Off, and its author, Robert McCrum, is writing about his experiences after he suffered a stroke, or rather a brain attack, which is a better description, so the author informs me. McCrum was 42, newly married, when the trauma struck. I have this book, hidden on a bookshelf, one I had almost entirely forgotten. I searched up and down the bookshelves in the study, and eventually I found it. Blowing off the dust, I began to read. The computer went to standby. I will admit I feel a bit queasy as the author describes the brain attack and much of the medical descriptors he employs to define the complexity of what he suffered. Illogically, I worry that by reading about this, I too, in some rather strange way, am tempting fate. McCrum is in no way making a theological reflection. But it is a reflection, and a reflection of a man who, whilst suffering severe physical trauma, spends much of his time recovering, reflecting about his previous life, and inevitably fearfully contemplating his future. It is a book written by a man who, pre-illness, is confident, rich, intelligent, and successful, who has a reputation to consider, but who is now forced to make some very serious and earnest re-evaluations of what is important. McCrum survived his unexplained brain attack and re-evaluated what was important, what was not, what is a joy and important, and what is superfluous, irrelevant and pointless. One of the things he decided was pointless was to worry about his own mortality, deciding to enjoy every last minute of this life with those whom he loved, taking none of it for granted. I would go further than this and say that one of the problems in our modern times is the propensity to trust in our own infallibility, the fragile construct of ourselves that can be shattered in the briefest of a moment. Jesus had a lot to say about how to live well and what in life is important. But I immediately think of St. Paul's letter to Timothy. It's found in the first book of Timothy, chapter 6 and verse 17, and I couldn't have put it better myself. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. So writes the Reverend Graham Birkett, who was the rector of Upper Itchen Benefice.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do this by either telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start off with the first letter,
which is from Nan Deeds, and the title is Resign. Sir, the Oxford English Dictionary defines a trustee as a, quote, a person or member of a board given possession of property with legal obligation to administer it solely for purposes specified, unquote. In view of Mr. Tate's astonishingly inaccurate comments with regard to the Hospital of St. Cross, Chronicle September the 21st and 28th, he has surely shot himself in the foot and forfeited any right to remain as a trustee of the hospital, such a valued and greatly loved part of Winchester's ancient history. That's from Nan Deeds, Tower Street, Winchester.
The second letter on the same subject is written by Michael Newman, and it's headed A Visionary. Sir, it is time to hail Councillor Tate as a modern visionary, as we can see from his plans for the Hospital of St. Cross. What a wonderful hotel complex this would make! Chronicle, September 21st and 28th. Hopefully, he will now extend his crystal vision to other aspects of Winchester. Well, as St. Thomas's Church on Southgate Street has shown, much profit can be made out of outmoded buildings. Well, with this in mind, perhaps Councillor Tate should consider a redevelopment of the cathedral. Now, it stands at the heart of the city and it's ripe for development, with lots of space for high-end apartments and, as William Walker has discovered, a ready-made underground swimming pool. In addition, social conscience could be appeased with the addition of social housing in the surrounding green land. Perhaps even the refectory could come altered to become a gym or a small sports centre. Best of all, the Tate vision would virtually solve Winchester's terrible pollution problem in one fell swoop, as tourism would cease in an instant by removing the majority of cars from the city centre and making more parking available for the local population. A win-win all round. That's from Michael Newman, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Not so quite so far, I'm afraid. But dear old Phil Yates writes and titles his letter, Sleep Safely. Sir, have no fear, brethren of St. Cross Hospital. Your accommodation is quite safe, as reflected in the Chronicle of September the 21st and 28th. Councillor Ian Tate should know better than to scare, quote, the living daylights, unquote, out of the elderly residents by even suggesting that the ancient building should be turned into an upmarket hotel, whatever that means, and for the brothers to be transferred to modern purpose-built accommodation. Utter rot. The church commissioners would not allow such a transformation, and the trustees would protect their residents. There may be a vacancy at the next AGM of the trustees after this. This is just a pipe dream of Councillor Tait. And if he is serious about so-called upmarket hotel for Winchester, then I suggest he looks elsewhere, preferably outside the city boundaries. I have fond memories of the Hospital of St. Cross, both as a child and in adulthood. My grandfather was a brother of the de Blois order, and every Sunday I was taken down to flat 12 to see him and my grandmother, because wives were allowed in those days. Both my grandparents are buried in the graveyard adjoining the chapel. My uncle, the Order of de Blois, and my great-uncle, the Beaufort Order, were also brethren of that marvellous charity. As an adult, I was involved professionally. Both Bernard Bremridge and John Clifton, solicitors and partners of Godwin's, were clerks to the trustees, and as such, I assisted them with legal matters. I often tell this amusing story about the seal of St. Cross Hospital. It was very heavy, locked away in a box, so that every time documents had to be sealed, we had to lift the seal out of the box, place the document underneath for sealing. And the seal obviously contained the cross of the hospital, and on the first attempt of sealing a document, the seal came out upside down, with the cross in reverse. This did not invalidate the document, but it was suggested to me that before I seal any more documents, test the seal on a piece of paper to make sure it was authentic. In conclusion, I say to the Brothers of St. Cross, you can sleep safely in your beds. No one is going to turf you out. We will see to that. So writes Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
Traffic ban is the title of this letter from Tony Wagstaff. Sir, having been a Hackney-licensed cabbie in the city of Winchester since 1987 up until 2015, I think I'm well familiar with the city centre traffic congestion that has become the norm in the areas stated in your article, Chronicle, September 28th. There is nothing that will alleviate or reduce the air pollution problem other than a complete ban on private motorists coming into or passing through the city. I would think or suggest that those who are involved with the planning of all the new projects such as Silver Hill, etc., take a good long look at what has happened in Oxford and other places where Park and Ride has worked quite well. In keeping with the problems facing Winchester, I personally feel that the same should happen in Winchester, with only essential traffic allowed into the centre, that being deliveries to local businesses and authorities. People who drive into their place of work will have to start using more park and ride facilities, unless their places of work can provide adequate space for parking, which I seriously doubt. It wouldn't take much for city centre car parks being for the use of disabled, elderly or infirm only, and would work on the same system already in place for disabled drivers. Public transport, such as buses and taxis, could easily be integrated into the system for those of lesser means or who do not have cars, etc. Those who are fit and able, a bicycle or Shanks pony is fine, and it would do a lot of good if those people who have neglected or abused personal health were made to exercise those flabby, weak bodies they complain about. There will always be the moaners who will object to anything that makes common sense. But I'm sure that with some real radical thought, these things will be overcome. Tony Wagstaff, Walpole Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
Mike Slynn talks on these same subjects. End the one way. Sir, the one way system in the city centre forces traffic from North Winchester to travel circuitously through the centre to reach South Winchester, and so creates congestion, extra travel miles, emissions and pollutants. It also creates a barrier for cyclist movements and an undesirable environment for pedestrians, particularly on St George's Street and Jury Street. We have inherited the one-way system from the 1970s, when concerns were about improving traffic capacity and speed. Our concerns are now to improve the environment in the city centre by reducing the amount of traffic and to keep speeds low through the introduction of a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit. The one-way system is then no longer fit for purpose in the 21st century. Other 21st century objectives include improving bus, cyclist and pedestrian access and movement in the city centre. There are plenty of examples, both nationally and internationally, of changing one-way street systems in city centres to two-way operation to achieve these objectives. There will be several alternative ways of redesigning the one-way system. These alternatives can be investigated when developing the Winchester Movement Strategy. These alternatives will all rely on making North Walls two-way, so that traffic can be reduced on Friarsgate, St George's Street and Jury Street, and so that those streets can then be redesigned for better bus, cycle and pedestrian movement, and to achieve an improved environment for us all. Some sections of North Walls are narrow, and so wide good vehicles would need to be banned from making movements through the city centre for two-way trafficking of North Walls to be viable. Enforcement of this ban should be readily achieved using modern number plate recognition systems. The County Council's study to develop the movement strategy will be the ideal opportunity to identify and test these alternatives and to gain public support for the best option. It's from Mike Slynn, Abbey Hill Road, Winchester.
Bill Ledbetter recalls his letter, or titles it, Revised Traffic Scheme. Sir, before considering a revised traffic scheme, we need to be clear about objectives, as cited in the Chronicle of September the 21st and the 28th. The factors are congestion, joined-up public transport system, provision for cycling, access for pedestrians, disabled and elderly, making the city welcoming to all, safety, and air quality. There is a finite capacity for traffic movement within the city road system. The city log jams during fairs and festivals and during motorway closures, which seem to be becoming a regular occurrence. No amount of rejigging traffic flows in the extant street plan can address these circumstances. One day, somebody will die because emergency services cannot penetrate these log jams. Winchester regularly fails to meet statutory air quality requirements. Traffic flows have been tinkered with over the years. We still have problems. I cannot see how the existing roads will ever cope without measures to reduce inner city traffic. This might be uncomfortable news, but I cannot see how we will fix the problems if we don't. We need the new parking strategy. More park and ride, less inner city parking, and should consider restricted private vehicle access during festivals and fairs. Priority needs to be given to public transport, pedestrians, cyclists, delivery services. We might even consider restrictions on delivery times within the city. The Middlebrook's parking could be reconfigured as a transport hub for buses, coaches and taxis, and a shuttle service to the railway station. If we can reduce inner city traffic, then perhaps we should consider new traffic flows, such as making North Walls and Jury Street bi-directional, and limiting Friars Gate and St George's Street to public transport, deliveries and disabled access. Through traffic, development in the northwest will inevitably cause more traffic travel towards south and east. A new leisure centre in the Bar End will exacerbate that. There is a momentum for an end to polluting vehicles. Should we in future restrict city access to clean vehicle types? Should we consider future implications for infrastructure? Will we need vehicle recharging facilities? What else? Bill Ledbetter, Highcliffe Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Now, if you're still awake, here's another article, or rather letter, about traffic changes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, wow.
But this one is from Derek Hickman. Sir, September the 21st, Hampshire Chronicle had a small article on page 4 entitled Crucial Study into City Traffic. That or something similar seems to have been happening and certainly been needed for many years now. As an ex-parish councillor, I know Winchester City Council / Hampshire County Council have asked for our views on such time and time again and invariably got them, but nothing has ever happened. When is this study likely to produce any results? Who's in charge of it? Almost everyone interviewed for the Chronicle's My Winchester Q&A column says the same, that the worst thing about Winchester is the traffic / one-way system. Winchester's big issue man, Kevin, was the latest to say so, also in the September the 21st paper. With all the current and proposed large-scale developments planned for the city, together with the mass of smaller ones already happening or have happened, the City Council is really running out of time to come up with serious solutions to the obvious problems ahead. When will a proper computer traffic model to analyse Winchester's traffic problems finally be up and running? It is essential for such a process to be successful. There's no way appropriate answers can just be dreamt up by councillors or officers sitting around a table looking at each other. I questioned this in a letter to the paper a few months ago, but who should I speak to for an answer or a response? Does anyone from the City Council read these letters? I also suggested that in the interim, before some two-way streets are reintroduced perhaps, Parchment Street might be changed around and made one way into town as it used to be. Any traffic coming or going from the Jury Street end of town would not then have to go all round the full one-way system to escape, thereby saving a certain amount of traffic or noise or air pollution from at least part of the city, albeit temporarily until results from this latest crucial traffic study are apparent. So writes Derek Hickman, Dean Downdrove, Littleton.
And I have exciting news because the next letter is not about traffic. It's written by Sarah Thorne and it's headed Mother's Thanks. Sir, I would like to thank the ladies who stopped to assist my daughter, Megan, after she was hit by a car outside the Jolly Farmer pub on the afternoon of Friday, September the 29th. Thank you for ringing me and letting me know she was OK and for calling the ambulance. I am very grateful. If you're able to pass your names to the Chronicle, I would very much like to thank you in person. That's from Sarah Thorne, The Close, Hatherdene, Andover.
Villagers respond, so writes David Forster. Sir, I write in response to Mr. Webb's letter, Perfect Location, of September the 28th. The current situation is based upon the view that the operator appears to have breached planning regulations as well as the terms and conditions laid down when planning was granted. The scheme was extremely controversial from the start, and the history is well documented as a sad reflection on the way our county council exercised its powers in overruling the local parish, district and city councils. No one is disputing the value of recycling. What is at issue is that the site has been expanded beyond that which was approved, and that in doing so, the operator has occupied additional land beyond the planning boundary, thereby impacting on the green screen, which was also a condition. These actions should have been the subject of a planning application before the event, not retrospectively, which for a company of this size cannot possibly have been an oversight. There are also prescribed routes for access to the site, which are not infrequently ignored. I hope your correspondent knows what these are. The authority has to rely upon local people reporting such breaches, and follow-up does happen. All that is being asked for is that the authority now does its job in ensuring that the site is recovered to its agreed limits in all respects, and this includes operating hours. After all, that is what the operator signed up to and what residents have had to endure to date. David Forster, Oxford Road, Sutton Scotney.
This letter has as its title a question. Does anybody know? Does anyone know what the police commissioner is actually doing? This office was an invention of the Cameron government, and at the time there were many who questioned the value of such an appointment. Like so many government initiatives, it seems to me there has been no opportunity to question the value this expensive appointment brings. I've read through what little is actually being published about Michael Lane, and as far as I can see, he has spent most of his time spending large sums of money setting up an office and occasionally attending the odd function. The few reports he has actually written use politically correct jargon which actually says nothing. As a seasoned chairman, I'm used to reading reports from executives when they have contributed nothing, and Michael Lane's offerings affirm he is swanning around trying to find something to do. And then we see he has appointed a deputy, Flick Drummond, Chronicle, September the 7th. Is this so that he has someone to talk to? Where is the accountability for this expense? That's from Tim Bittleston, Main Road, Abbotsworthy.
This letter is from Chris Polletch, and it's headed Bid, For or Against, At Least Vote. Sir, a message to local businesses, please vote. I have written before expressing my opposition to the Business Improvement District bid. I'm not writing to repeat my arguments, but simply to encourage all those eligible to vote to do so. According to the information I have, only 44% of those eligible to vote last time around, that was in 2012, did so. You can't complain about paying the bid levy or feel pleased that you do if you don't even take part in the process. If you don't agree with bid but fail to vote, you may end up paying the levy by default. If you think bid is a good thing, you should express your support by voting for it so that at least those who, like me, do not agree with it can see that a majority are in favour of it. So make sure that you use your vote in the upcoming ballot. That's written by Chris Polletch, City Business Centre, Hyde Street, Hyde.
Peter Pooley writes, "Sheep, not a pig." Sir, hurrah for Chris Sparks for reminding us in his letters of the September the 28th of what every Hampshire school child should know, that the Hampshire hog is not a pig, but a mature sheep, a hogget. It should be obvious. Our county's agricultural prosperity was built on the production of sheep on our downs, onward from the Middle Ages, and especially after the repeal of the Corn Laws made arable production on our thin chalk soil unprofitable. And until 100 years ago, mutton, not lamb, was the working family's cheapest source of protein. Mutton came largely from hoggets, and in this part of England, hoggets came from the famous and still glorious Hampshire Down breed. There is no breed of pig associated with Hampshire. I blame the County Council for this gross error. Based in Winchester, it was a bunch of townies with no background in farming, who decided to place a pig in the place of honour instead of a hogget. The county headquarters should have been moved long ago to Alsford, scene of the great and historic annual sheep fairs, where we understand Hampshire's history and have our roots in the soil and in livestock production. Do so now, and the income generated from the displaced bureaucratic activity will quickly raise the funds for us to commission a splendid hogget in bronze on display in Broad Street, once the great marketplace for sheep. Winchester can keep itself warm and nourished with a hog roast. Peter Pooley, Station Approach, Alsford.
Now for some added clarification in this letter from Roger Chatterton Newman, which is entitled Sheep and a Pig. Sir, Chris Sparks is mistaken if he believes the term hogget refers only to sheep. Letters, September the 28th.
Dear, was my journey necessary?
While it is, indeed, together with hoggerel and hog, an unshorn yearling sheep, a hogget is also a boar in its second year. For at least three centuries, we natives have been known affectionately as Hampshire hogs, and the county was long famed, as Francis Gross wrote in 1790, for, quote, a fine breed of hogs and the excellency of the bacon made there, unquote. During the first century AD, a pig was depicted on the coinage of Bericus, client king of the Belgae, whose capital was to develop into Winchester. And who can ignore Hoglandia, or A Description of Hampshire, a stirring poem by Thomas Richards of Jesus College, Oxford. Written in 1719, it tells of how the gods sent a monstrous wild boar to terrify the county, and how Sir Bevis of Southampton, one of our legendary heroes, destroyed the creature. Of course, Hampshire Down sheep are important, thanks to John Talmadge Twynham of Whitchurch Manor, who pioneered the breed in the 1830s and 1840s. By all means, erect a statue of a sheep, but please, let our proud Hampshire hog remain unscathed outside County Hall. That's from Roger Chatterton Newman, Stretton's Copse, Milland.
I have a feeling that story is going to run and run. Anyway, we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 150 and 25 years ago, so 100 years ago.
Right, this is Saturday, October the 6th, 1917. It's to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. Sir, it is to be hoped that many of your readers will lay to heart the eloquent plea in your out-of-doors column of September the 29th for leaving the wild berries to their rightful owners, the birds. May I be allowed to point out that not only Christmas, but harvest festival decorators need the warning given by E.W. There is surely cruel irony in singing of human food all is safely gathered in a building for decked with the natural fare of those who have no storehouse or barn. Yours, F.E.M.
50 years ago, Saturday, October the 7th, 1967. Last weekend at Hazeldown Farm, Twyford, at the kind invitation of Mr. Sidney Best, members of the Bishop's Waltham Young Farmers Club carried out a 24-hour ploughing marathon. The weather and ploughing conditions were perfect, and the first ploughshares cut into the soil soon after 1 p.m. Among those who loaned the six tractors and ploughs, free of charge, were Messrs. Curtis and Padwick Limited, Hythe Abbey Motors Limited, William Wheatley Limited, and Messrs. Scatts Limited. Free fuel was given by the Watson Petroleum Company. 16 drivers worked for 8 hours in relays, some in 4-hour shifts. During the 24 hours, there were continuous supply with tea, coffee, and hot soup by girl members of the club. A keen wind persisted all night, and though this assisted ploughing conditions, it was not good for the spectators. After the last headland had been completed and 135 acres ploughed, members gathered in the farmyard where the chairman expressed thanks to Mr. Best, and in return, Mr. Best handed a cheque for £135 to him, representing £1 per acre ploughed.
25 years ago, Friday, October the 9th, 1992. Difficult pupils at a Winchester school have built a jeep for disabled children at Greenacres Special School. Some 20 children with emotional and behavioural difficulties at the Brook School in Andover Road have been working for the past 18 months on the vehicle. The end result was presented to the nearby Greenacres School on Friday. The Brook's design and technology teacher, Ken Lee, explained, "We thought it would be a good idea to make pupils at the Brook work with children who have problems of their own." A pupil, Stuart Campbell, came up with the idea, and then other children joined in, and by the time it was finished, most of the children had worked on it. The Jeep itself was built from scratch and modified specifically for children at Greenacres.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by First Person.
Yes, the comment concerns the dearth of firefighters. The fire service is one of the key components of a civilised society. Having an organisation dedicated to tackling the most serious emergencies is one of our bedrocks, and even if one is taken for granted by many people. As we report today, lives are being put at risk because of insufficient staff available to crew fire engines in villages and small towns across the county. Safety campaigners describe it as the worst ever shortage. The problem is the seemingly unstoppable changes in rural society. Even as recently as 20 to 30 years ago, every village had a supply of fit people ready and available to work as part-time firefighters. Now those villages are full of commuters and the retired, while the farms and many other businesses have cut the number of employees. The solution, which many people will consider controversial, is now to ensure that the villages are able to grow and particularly see an increase in development of starter homes and those available for rent, as well as small businesses, which will encourage to work locally. That way, villages such as Sutton Scotney and Droxford will return to a better social mix. Such villages do not need five-bedroom family homes to be lived in by people who drive out during the morning and return in the evenings. The conservation pendulum has swung too far, and there must be serious attempts to rectify the balance.
Ron Allison's article today entitles "Today and in, quote, my day," unquote. So, the first-class cricket season is over at last. Not that I don't enjoy cricket, I certainly do. But England playing an international match in the last week of September? In England? Whatever next? It wasn't like that in my day. But when was my day? Or when was your my day? It's a funny expression, but I guess what we all mean is a time when we, that is our family and our friends, hear ourselves saying, "That's not how we used to do it." But how far back do we go to find out when that was? Is it when we are with our children or grandchildren, explaining that there was a time in our lives when we didn't have a telephone or television in our home, and that we all helped with the washing up because we didn't own a dishwasher? In fact, we didn't then know anyone who did have a dishwasher. Perhaps we didn't even know there were such things. Of course, we can talk of my day, either thankfully or nostalgically. We can be grateful that back then we never had to spend ages looking for a mislaid mobile phone, or regretful that we didn't have the benefits of always being able to get in contact with our nearest and dearest at any time. It's a game we can play both ways. Usually, I find I'm happy both to be where I am now and to be able to vividly recall particular days as mine because of what they meant to me at the time. To use some F words, many can be classified under faith, family, friends. Days when something unusual or very special happened. Most of us, I expect, would share many of them. First meeting the person we married, our wedding day, the birth of our children, their wedding days, the birth of their children, and then on their children's children. Oh, gosh. All kinds of personal occasions, some, of course, sad, others just for keeping strictly to oneself. A strange mix, this particular mind game, but worth trying. Memories. Growing up in Weymouth, tea on the beach, always with banana sandwiches. To this day, that banana smell takes me straight back. Sea, sand, pebbles and Punch and Judy. And my father, himself a born and bred Geordie, who had come south, taking me to my first professional football match in 1945 to see Newcastle United play Sheffield United at St James's Park. I was hooked. As it turned out, forever going to Newcastle also meant grandparents, and they made each holiday another my day. So a somewhat different offering this month, but at least as the party conference season comes to an end, I have avoided mentioning any of my political my days. That indeed is something for which to be thankful, although there must be a joke somewhere involving May Day, May Day. No? Okay.
There are no special announcements this week. A few items of what's on. On Tuesday the 10th of October from 1 till 2 in the afternoon in Winchester Cathedral Choir, there is a lunchtime concert given by Roger Owens Piano, and that's free with a retiring collection. And that's the last in the series of the Tuesday lunchtime concerts in the cathedral. On Sunday the 15th of October at 7 p.m. in St Paul's Church, there is an Evening in Vienna by the Winchester Camerata. Tickets are £12.50, and you can obtain these by telephoning 01962 732 487. That's 01962 732 487. And also on Sunday the 15th of October, also at 7 p.m. in Winchester Guildhall, there is an evening with Des O'Connor. Tickets are available from the tourist information from £22. Tourist information telephone number is 01962 840 550. That's 01962 840 550. Lighting up times. Sunrise these days is at around 7:15 in the morning, and sunset is around 6:30 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recordings you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Charity success. Around 150 people gathered in Winchester Great Hall to dine and be entertained and to raise a staggering £20,000 for Winchester and District Samaritans. The event, held in the presence of the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, was the first of its kind and was a resounding success. Guests were treated to a performance of chamber music during the champagne reception by local duo Patricia Drummond and George Shrapnel. Throughout the evening, guests enjoyed bidding on the online auction with prizes donated by many local businesses. A live auction with local auctioneer Andrew Smith brought the fundraising to an exciting end. The highlight of the evening was a moving and inspiring talk by local speaker Alex Lewis, who bore personal witness to the fact that life can be renewed even after the darkest times. The evening concluded with a spirited performance by a Welsh choir, Con Voce. The charity is grateful to the leader of the County Council, Roy Perry, represented on the occasion by his deputy, Graham Burgess, who gifted the use of the hall. Branch Director Anne-Marie Drummond said, "The event in the wonderful setting gave the branch not only the opportunity to raise funds to support us in helping our tens of thousands of callers, but also the chance to raise the profile of our work in the community."
Upmarket restaurant set for key High Street location. An empty unit in a prime spot on Winchester's High Street is set to become an upmarket restaurant, creating 100 new jobs. Applicants, Troyer Restaurants, have submitted plans to open a branch of The Ivy, which specialises in fine dining. Until recently, the store at 103 was occupied by clothes shop LK Bennett, but it closed its doors in September due to high rent and business rates. It joined a number of other well-known and independent brands leaving the city, including Zoe Jewellers, Next and Jaeger. In July, independent fashion retailer Cadogan and Company, which has been in business under the ownership of Alex Edwards for more than 20 years in the square, also went into administration. But at the same time, Turtle Bay is due to move in the former Tony and Guy site, and TK Maxx are also set to open a new shop in the Brooks Shopping Centre. Tesco is also set to move into the unit where River Island used to sit in the High Street. The Ivy is already established in London and venues across the UK, including Covent Garden, Bath and Tunbridge Wells. If the application is approved, the Winchester premises will employ around 100 staff and will be open for breakfast from 8 a.m. until the evening. The ground floor will feature the restaurant, while there will be office space on the first, second and third floors. The scheme will be decided by the Winchester City Council by November the 13th. LK Bennett said they had hoped to find another site in the city centre.
City activist leaves townhouse to charity. A Winchester man bequeathed his historic home to a building conservation charity. The Landmark Trust usually opens its properties to the public as holiday lets. Chris Webb, who died in September 2015, aged 76, left his 18th century house at Chernock Place off Southgate Street to the Trust. Mr. Webb was a tireless campaigner for civic and public causes, including helping to secure the preservation of the Hockley Viaduct outside Winchester, which formerly carried the Southampton to Newbury Railway from late Victorian times to its closure in the early 1960s. At one stage, the 1890s concrete and brick structure was set for demolition by the army, but it has now been restored and opened to the public by the City Council. The Landmark Trust owns around 200 properties, ranging from farms, cottages, mills and towers, ranging again from the Middle Ages to the 20th century. A Trust spokesman said, "We can confirm that we have recently taken on Chernock Place in Winchester, following Mr. Christopher Webb's wishes. We are grateful to Mr. Webb for both his work to preserve the listed townhouse in his lifetime and his determination that it should have a secure future. We are currently exploring a number of options for its future." Among the projects that Mr. Webb was involved with was the commemoration of the link between a city centre building and a Sherlock Holmes short story. In 2012, a plaque was unveiled at Black Swan Buildings to mark the site of the hotel where Holmes and sidekick Watson lunched in the Arthur Conan Doyle's short story, The Copper Beeches. The hotel itself was demolished in the 1930s when Southgate Street was widened at its junction with the High Street. Mr. Webb has been remembered in the limited edition reissue of the booklet Winchester, A Fair City by Geoffrey Smith, and there's a little afternote saying that all profits from the booklet go to the City of Winchester Trust. It is only obtainable from the Winchester Bookshop, 10 St. George's Street, Winchester.
Traffic Warden's Favourite Vehicle. A driver has been slapped with at least 5 penalties after his or her vehicle was left in a council car park. The car, a blue Volkswagen, has been in the car park at the Winchester Hotel in Worthy Road for a number of weeks with a note in the window saying, "Clutch broken, can't move." Parking wardens have already stuck 5 penalty notices to the windscreen with another on the road nearby. One resident who didn't want to be named said, "It's been there 5 weeks, maybe longer. Why keep putting the fixed penalty notices on it?" However, a Winchester City Council spokesperson said the vehicle does not qualify as abandoned as it has both a current MOT and tax. However, penalties have been issued to the car for being parked in an incorrect location within the car park. Statutory regulations do not allow us to obtain ownership details from the DVLA until 28 days have passed, but this date will be reached on Thursday, October the 5th, which was yesterday as I'm reading this. So we will then be able to contact the owner about removing the car as soon as possible.
Hive Star Andrews, the bee's knees. Make that what you like. A widow who lost a beloved gold ring given to her by her husband when she was attacked by a bee has been reunited with it thanks to a treasure hunter in a full beekeeping suit. Metal detectorist Andrew Coombs spent 4 hours surrounded by more than 80,000 swarming insects hunting for the missing jewellery. The 56-year-old, who runs a metal detecting club, received an email from distressed Diane Oliver asking for help after she lost the ring near 3 beehives in the grounds of her workplace. Diane, a housekeeper at Upham Farm, near Bishop's Waltham, told Mr. Coombs that the ring, given to her by her late husband, had flown off as she tried to swat away a bee caught in her hair. Mr. Coombs had donned a full beekeeping suit to protect himself as he searched for the ring. Mr. Coombs from Portsmouth said, "I spent hours going up and down in the area that the ring was supposed to be while bees were flying in and out of their hives and found nothing. I spoke to Diane, who told me she waved her hand and felt the ring go down her top and then she had to run away in a different direction from where I'd been searching. I tried again in the area that she told me it might be, flattening the long grass and an 8-inch high thistles, and within 20 minutes I had a good signal. I parted the long grass and saw this gold ring. I picked it up with delight and gave a great yell at the top of my voice. I was overcome with emotion. I took the ring to Diane, who looked at me with disbelief, as it was great sentimental value to her. She had lost her husband a few years earlier, and it meant a lot to her. Mr. Coombs, an IT administrator, did not ask for payment for his time, so was surprised to find a gift bag containing a bottle of chilled champagne and a thank you note from Diane on his car bonnet. I am still buzzing that I have made someone very happy, and that is a great feeling. That's one of the reasons why I love the metal detecting hobby," he said. Mr. Coombs, who has been deaf since the age of 4, uses a metal detector that vibrates when it picks up a signal.
Mm. Muslim and Christian enjoy a shared lunch. Muslims and Christians gathered at Winchester Cathedral's Wessex Centre for a bring and share lunch. The event was organised in the wake of the van attack on a group of Muslims outside the Finsbury Park Mosque who were run into while helping a dying man. The theme for the lunch was loving your neighbour, in tribute to the Imam who then protected the attacker from the angry crowd. A great time was had by the 80 people of all ages who attended, including the mayor and mayoress of Winchester, David and Diane MacLean, and Steve Brine, MP. New friendships were begun, and subsequent events are planned to build relationships for further and serve the wider community, said organiser Rowley Rean.
Drinking coffee for cancer charity. Kettles were boiled and cakes baked in Winchester in aid of Macmillan Cancer Support. M&S Winchester on the High Street were one of many around the district who got involved, with customers enjoying a slice of cake and a cup of coffee. Ahead of the event, Ben Wettingsteel, M&S Winchester's cold chain manager, had cycled nearly 160 miles over 2 days to raise funds for the charity. Sam Harrison, cafe manager at M&S Winchester, added, "Our stationary bike ride covered the distance from Winchester to Paris, and we also had a raffle. Our target is to fundraise more than £4,000. 2017 marks the 8th year that M&S has partnered with Macmillan Cancer Support, a collaboration that has raised £10 million for the charity to date. Each year, M&S hosts world's biggest coffee morning events in its stores across the length and breadth of the country. The collective efforts of stores and customers helps fund vital support and services for people living with cancer across the UK. This year, M&S and Macmillan are aiming to surpass last year's fundraising total of £3.2 million, enough to fund 66 Macmillan healthcare professionals for a year. Matt Sellen, store manager at M&S Winchester, said, "The annual coffee morning is a great way to bring friends, family and communities together, all whilst raising funds for a fantastic cause. We hope that this year's event will be our most successful yet." Vocal group The Spitfire Sisters also entertained coffee and cake lovers at Winchester's Guildhall for its coffee morning, where there was a chance to meet local independents including Chococo, The Corner House, Flat Whites and Raw Bean.
Brian urges talks over strike threat. Winchester's MP is urging rail bosses and union members to go back to a negotiating table after staff voted to go on strike. The RMT union members from South Western Railway, which operates services between Hampshire and London Waterloo, back the industrial action by a margin of 4-1. Staff held the ballot over the role of guards on trains, which has seen Hampshire passengers using Southern Railway services face months of travel chaos due to a number of walkouts by staff. Winchester and Chalmersford MP Steve Brine said, "It is clear that this dispute is not about jobs. South Western Railway have been clear, no one will lose their job, and they plan to keep a second member of staff on board trains. In fact, the train operator has announced plans to hire even more guards and drivers. Nor is the RMT's dispute about safety, as the independent rail regulator, the Office of Rail and Road, has ruled that driver-controlled trains are safe." The Conservative MP, a frequent rail commuter, said, "Strike dates have not been announced by the RMT and I urge both parties to get back to the negotiating table. I hope a resolution can be found to the RMT's dispute, however, should strike dates be announced, I will be working closely with the Transport Secretary to provide my constituents with a full update about constituency measures being planned by South Western Railway. We want all parties to put passengers first on our railways." As previously reported, South Western Railway, run by First Group and Hong Kong-based MTR, took over the rail franchise from South West Trains in August. It is now the fifth rail operator to be embroiled in a dispute over the role of guards and driver-only trains. RMT General Secretary Mike Cash said, RMT has given repeated opportunities for the first MTR to give us assurances we have sought over the future role of guards on their trains throughout the length of the new Southwestern franchise. They have refused to give us those guarantees, and it is that failure which left RMT with no option but to declare a formal dispute with the company and to conduct a ballot for action. No dates for the proposed strike action have yet been set.
Miracle recovery man in South Run. A young Hampshire man who is making a miracle recovery after falling down a 3-metre slope on holiday is taking part in the Great South Run. A group of Tom's friends will be helping him complete the 10-mile course in a wheelchair. Tom Harris, aged 23, a former Perrin School pupil in Alresford, booked a getaway to Slovenia at the beginning of August with 4 friends. He was split up from his friends on the last evening of their holiday, and as Tom was walking home, he accidentally slipped and fell off a 3-metre slope, severely hitting his head on the grass verge. Louis alerted Tom's parents, Leroy and Louise Harris, who then got the next flight available to Slovenia. Tom, from Dummer, north of Winchester, was rushed to hospital in the capital, Ljubljana, where he was put in an induced coma for 3 weeks. A crowdfunding page raised £8,990 to help towards his treatment, covering the cost of a private plane to Southampton General Hospital, where he was later transferred to Basingstoke Hospital before being discharged a week later on September the 15th. Leroy Harris said, "I can't believe the efforts that have been made to the crowdfunding page. The whole experience has been incredible, especially Tom's friends and family." And Tom added, "It's been the weirdest couple of months. It feels like I've just lost a month." The nurses at Basingstoke Hospital were referring to my recovery as a miracle. "I'm very thankful for how everything turned out and that I'm still with it." The near-fatal incident has prompted over 20 of his friends and family to take part in the Great South Run in Portsmouth on October the 22nd to raise money for Headway and Teenage Cancer Trust. Tom will be taking part in a wheelchair, although medical staff say he will make a full recovery. And this article is accompanied by a photograph showing Tom Harris with 3 of his friends, Louis Telford, Stuart Bishop and Jack Clark, who presumably are helping him recover and get back to normal.
The Search for Poet Laureate. A competition to find Hampshire's next Poet Laureate has been launched. The Search for the Hampshire Poet 2018 is being led by Hampshire Cultural Trust, who are encouraging wordsmiths from all over the county to apply. The search, which runs every other year, aims to foster local writing talent and continues the successful laureate scheme first begun in 2008. The winning poet will receive 2 paid commissions highlighting projects and activities run by the Trust during the year. As well as being a talented poet, the winner will need to be a confident speaker and a strong advocate for the pleasures of reading and writing. The competition is open to anyone aged 18 or over who lives, works or studies in Hampshire. Janet Owen, Chief Executive at Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "Hampshire Poet 2018 is a fantastic opportunity for an exceptional talent to be part of the cultural life of Hampshire. We're looking for a poet who can not only whisk us away with their words, but also someone who can be a champion for poetry and literacy within the community." The 2016 winner, Isabel Rogers, produced a wealth of verse during her tenure, some published online and some in print on bookmarks. She worked on arts and heritage projects across the county and held workshops in venues, including schools, libraries and arts centres, encouraging people of all ages to write their own poetry. She is now on the judging panel for this year's competition, joining poet and chairman of the Winchester Poetry Festival, Stephen Boyce, and Angela Hicken, literature officer at Hampshire Cultural Trust. To apply, entrants need to submit two poems along with a short statement of what they can bring to the role and gain from the experience. The competition will close on Friday, December the 8th, and the winner will be announced in the new year. Applications for the competition can be made online at the Hampshire Cultural Trust website.
The next item is actually a photograph. It's a photograph of five beautiful smiling ladies, and it's headed Ariella Makes It Five Generations. Marion Dyke, aged 94, of Sutton Scotney, is proud to share the safe arrival of her great-great-granddaughter, Ariella. And the photograph shows her daughter, Susan Davis, Marion Dyke herself, great-granddaughter Natalie Merriman with Ariella, and granddaughter Nikki Harris. Natalie said, "The family is beyond excited about it. It is really quite lovely."
Residents go in time for a wartime tea party. A Winchester residence went back in time for a wartime tea party. A party for tenants from Hydegate Sheltered Housing Accommodation was organised by tenants and council together, known as TACT, T-A-C-T, and city council officers from the tenant involvement team. More than 30 guests enjoyed an afternoon tea at Hyde Parish Hall on Hyde Street, which included sandwiches, cakes and scones. Entertainment was provided by Amy Baker, who sang vintage jazz numbers to the gathering. Student volunteers from Winchester Hub helped out on the day, and some of the food was provided by community organisation First Bite, who used surplus food from supermarkets for the cakes and sandwiches. There was also a raffle with prizes which were donated by Osborne's, who work in partnership with Winchester City Council. Winchester City Council Tenant Involvement Officer Heather Wensley said, "We wanted to get tenants together to help reduce social isolation and find out a bit more about them. We had some wonderful, interesting tenants there and learnt a lot of stories." Chairwoman of TACT, Monica Gill, added, "It was absolutely brilliant. We had the right amount of people and everyone enjoyed themselves. I would like to thank the students and Osborne's and the people from Tenant Involvement and Councillor Horrell who took the time to join us."
Opposition grows to plan for 320 homes. Alsford residents have been objecting to the proposals for a new estate on the edge of the town. The proposal by Seaward Properties for 320 homes and industry on farmland off Sun Lane is out for consultation. Many local people are concerned about the increase of traffic on narrow roads such as Sun Lane. Mr. Fowler says a new access road onto B3407 Bishop's Sutton Road is needed. He pointed out that until the opening of the Alsford bypass in the 1980s, it was a major road. He said, "We are not opposed to 325 houses, but they're in the wrong place. With only one access onto Sun Lane for 600 cars a day, the B3407 is the old A31, a wide road suitable for that extra traffic. There should be access there." Cheriton Parish Council and the South Downs National Park Authority have objected to the scheme.
Deputy Mayor opens care home wing. A Winchester care home celebrated the opening of its new wing with a summer fete. Residents, family, staff and neighbours joined a jam-packed day of activities at St Cross Grange in St Cross for the opening of their new Willow Wing. Run by Greensleeves Care, the home on St Cross managed to raise more than £400 for its Residents Amenities Fund.
Celebrating annual harvest at the Close. Hundreds flocked to Winchester to take part in a popular harvest festival. Celebrations of autumn were well underway at this year's Hampshire Harvest Festival at Winchester Cathedral and Close. The event celebrates local agriculture and produce, featuring independent producers and providing an insight into one of the most important aspects of the county's economy. Among this year's attractions were a falconry display, crafts for the youngest, horse-drawn carriage rides, farm animals, and the Hampshire Fair Market. Participants also had the chance to listen to the fairground organs, learn about the Bat Society, find out about beekeeping, and clamber onto vintage farm machinery. The grape and grain area, highlighting local beers, ciders, sparkling wines and artisan gins from across the country, also made its return to the venue, along with the traditional scarecrow competition. The County Harvest Service featured the Cathedral Choir and Junior Choir with offerings of harvest gifts representing the produce of Hampshire.
Council pressing on with 50-metre pool vision. An Olympic-sized swimming pool, hydrotherapy suite and four squash courts with movable walls. Those are just a few of the facilities that will be in the proposed Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre. Following public consultations and discussions with sports clubs and governing bodies, civic chiefs have now revealed what the planned multi-million pound leisure centre at Bar End will include. In addition to a 50-metre swimming pool, which will have a movable floor and be divided into two 25-metre pools when required, the centre will have a learner pool and splash area, as well as an 8-court sports hall that can be used for various activities, including badminton, football, basketball and netball. The site will also feature 8 treatment and therapy rooms, a gym with 200 stations, 2 large studios for exercise classes, a spin studio with around 60 bikes, and a cafe. A City Council spokeswoman said, "The proposed specification has been decided following consultation and engagement with residents, sports clubs, and users. The needs assessment identified a need for a wide range of health and fitness suites. Therefore, we have increased provision to support this current unmet demand within Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre. The council will work with Winchester University, who will be putting £6 million into the scheme, and the Pindar Trust, a charity which helps disabled people, will put £1 million towards the hydrotherapy suite. The leisure centre, which would be built at the garrison ground if planning permission is granted, is estimated to cost around £36 million. But Councillor Horrill said, "The council wants the facility to be in a position where it can pay for itself. We are really delighted to be working with the university and the Pindar Trust. It would replace the centre in River Park. The council will outline its business case later this year, with a planning application likely early next year."
New Wine Initiative is launched. A new English wine initiative is being launched by a vineyard near Alresford. The Big English Wine Adventure sees Hattingley Valley teaming up with TV presenters and masters of wine Susie Barry and Peter Richards to make a small production, Hampshire Blanc de Blanc. Familiar faces from presenting on flagship BBC One show Saturday Kitchen, the couple are asking for help in selecting a charity to support with the venture, as well as finding a name for the wine. The project is intended to be fun, but also fundamentally collaborative in nature, working to benefit good causes, said Susie. We want to help people get more involved in the process, as well as to make some noise about the fantastic job being done by the many brilliant winemakers in this country. And we'd like to thank Hattingley in this. Primarily, though, our aim is to make an utterly delicious wine.
Which one should I have? Better access promised for mental health care. Civic chiefs have unfailed plans to make it easier for those living with mental health issues to access support. New plans agreed by Hampshire County Council will see their well-being centres become one-stop shops, with social care and National Health Service mental health specialist staff being brought together. With 11 centres across the county, the plans have been arranged by the County Council's Executive Member for Adult Social Care and Health, Councillor Liz Fairhurst. A one-stop approach will also be developed for areas such as crisis support and support for young people. Support from the centres can be accessed by dropping in or through GP referral. The county is contributing just under £6 million, with the rest coming from the CGCs. Not quite sure what that is, but anyway, there we are.
New Chief Fire Officer appointed for county. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service has appointed a new Chief Officer. Neil Odin will start in his new role as leader of the service from January next year. He replaces Chief Dave Curry, who is stepping down after a decade from the role he called the best in the UK Fire Service. Mr. Odin said that he was delighted to be taking on the role of Chief Officer for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. He said, "It is a position that I know carries great responsibility as our service strives to make life safer for every resident. Stepping into the shoes of someone as respected and admired as Dave will be a tough challenge, but I am confident I can bring a new perspective and insight to the role. There is no doubt I take on the job at a time of great change in the fire service, but I am looking forward immensely to the challenge of ensuring we continue to supply an exemplary service to our communities and to leading such a great organisation." The 44-year-old joined the service as Assistant Chief in March 2012, having previously worked at West Sussex Fire and Rescue Service for more than 20 years. Later, as Deputy Chief and Director of Service Delivery, covering community safety, response and resilience, he was responsible for firefighting and frontline response, prevention, safe and well visits, business fire safety and community self-help plans. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority Chairman Councillor Chris Carter said, "I am pleased to announce the appointment of our new Chief Officer. I am very much looking forward to working with Neil when he formally takes up the appointment in January and supporting him in continuing the excellent work that has been achieved in making Hampshire and the Isle of Wight safer. Being at the helm of one of the best and most progressive services in the country is an enormous responsibility, and in Neil we have the right person to lead the service forward."
Fate draws crowds and raises £6,000. More than 1,000 people gathered for the Bishop Waltham Fair, now in its third consecutive year. After 9 months of planning by a committee of seven, the event at the 900-year-old St Peter's Church had more than 40 stalls. There was a dog show, racing pigs, dipping ducks, the coconuts were shy, and ferrets were racing. And there was a grand raffle and treasure hunt. There were even classic cars with an appearance by a 1936 Rolls-Royce. Trips up the tower were very popular, with a 360-degree view of the fair and surrounding countryside. There are also performances by the church choir and maypole dancing by Roynan Dance. And the day raised £6,000 for the church fund.
That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks also to our various technical teams. And a great thank you to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.